Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Gloria, you're always on the run now. Running after somebody.
Okay, who's this guy? This guy's name is Ross Goodkin. Where did we find this? Up on Facebook?
You've got to slow down.
Is this going viral a little bit just because he's really bad? Is he here in St. Louis? Do you know if Ross is here in St. Louis or not?
I think you're headed for
Ross.
Breakdown.
I think we think that Ross understands that he does not have pitch, not even close to perfect pitch.
Really don't remember.
But he's giving it his best try here, right?
Was it something that he said?
Here we go. Listen to the high notes here.
Are the voices in your head?
Mm-hmm. There it is.
Calling Gloria.
Well, he kind of took it down an octave there, didn't he? He did something unique with it. Good job, Ross. If I never hear that song again, it won't be too soon, that's for sure. But we're going to do it again anyway. So people were having a lot of fun. We're going to have Chris Kerber on the air a little bit later this afternoon at 4:20 to recount what happened yesterday in San Jose, a little preview of tomorrow night as well. So a lot of positive feelings here. Not to get too excited because we are just a game away from a hell of a celebration here in St. Louis. Now, I understand you still got to win the Stanley Cup, but and there's no... Dave, how do you think people are going to be? If we get there, this is always dangerous. We lose the whole deal because Boston's so good. Is it going to be, you know what, though? We finally got to the Stanley Cup final. No, it's not good enough, right? You're trying to win this whole thing. And I don't like the attitude. I'm hearing this from some fans. You know, wow, Boston's really good. I don't know if we can beat Boston. The hell with that. You can beat Boston. If a, 55-1 shot can win over the horse that should have won at the Kentucky Derby, anything can happen. All right, a couple of stories here to get through before Scott Jennings, who's coming up in a couple of minutes, and then we'll have not only Dan Reardon this hour, but a great story from a golf event that I participated in over the weekend at Forest Park. And it was the 2019 Lee Bear Memorial Golf Benefit. Lee was a Air Force major. He was a pilot. He crashed in a private plane in an accident in 2017, and they started this golf tournament. And his brother did something very unique over the weekend, and I want to share that story, and then Dan will recap what Brooks Koepka did out on Long Island over the weekend. Kamala Harris says, I found this story in the LA Times. She wants to toughen penalties on employers who underpay women. Democratic presidential hopeful Kamala Harris released a plan today to overhaul U.S. discrimination laws to ensure women and men are paid equally for the same work. Companies would be required to obtain federal certification showing they're not underpaying women. Those that fail to do so could be fined billions of dollars. Employers, think about the implications here of what Kamala Harris and other Democrats think is a good idea when it comes to government interfering in businesses across the country. Employers would be forced to show that any pay gap between women and men is based on merit, performance, or seniority. Companies that discriminate against women would be fined at 1% of their average daily profits for every 1% gap that exists between the pay of male and female employees doing the same job. The junior senator from California provided the broad outline of the proposal at a rally on Sunday at Southwest College in L.A. I mean, this whole thing is just ridiculous. And the problem is, well, two things. One, ain't never going to happen. It's about as dumb a proposal as she could come up with, but it plays very well. Now, whenever I talk about dumb proposals from politicians, I do feel obligated to include this one. We're going to build the wall and Mexico is going to pay for the wall. That was pretty stupid. Didn't happen. Some of you like to defend it. It was ridiculous. It was a campaign promise. Nothing more than that. Sort of similar to what Bernie's doing and some of these other folks, Elizabeth Warren, very populist. Let's, get women all riled up. How about this? How about we start auditing companies to see, because we all know this happens. Look, life's not fair, ladies and gentlemen. You're probably paid less than someone at your work when you should be paid more. Or vice versa. People are compensated in a variety of different ways based on level of experience. You know how you get more money when you're in a job? You get another job. Either you take the other job that pays you more money, or you go back to your employer and you say, hey, I got a job that's going to pay me more money. What are you going to do? They're going to write you more money, or they're going to let you go. That's how you get paid more money, not because you're a male or a female. If you provide a benefit to that company, you're a valued employee, you're doing good work, they're going to want to keep you and retain talent, whether you're a male or a female. And this whole notion about women being underpaid compared to men is utterly ridiculous anyway, because if that was the case, why in the hell wouldn't employers just hire women? It's a much better deal, right? We're going to maximize our profits because women are going to make less money than men. Boom, we can do it. Now, are some women undercompensated compared to male counterparts? Sure, they probably are. I bet there's some male counterparts that are undercompensated compared to women. I bet there's some, you know, the list can go on. Older compared to younger. White compared to black. Black compared to white. Vice versa. You don't want, or do we? Do we want the government going in and auditing the books of companies to see who's getting paid what? I mean, let's just be honest. That's a terrible, terrible idea, but it's going to work well during an election year. This is a positive story about money. And this one, I get to do this quick because we run out of time. We got Scott Jennings coming up. But when I heard this story, I thought we need more of this. There's a billionaire technology investor, Robert Smith, Robert F. Smith. He's delivering the commencement speech to Morehouse College, and he gives them a pretty, I can't even think of a better graduation gift than this.
On behalf of the eight generations of my family who have been in this country, we're going to put a little fuel in your bus. Now, I've got the alumni over there, and this is a challenge to you, alumni. This is my class, 2019. And my family is making a grant to eliminate their student loans.
He paid or is paying for all those students' student loans. Now, I bet the students that don't have student loans are thinking, hey, wait, what do I get out of this deal? But still, a very generous gift, I guess you would say. And this is where it should come from. You know, Robert F. Smith and others like him should step up to the plate. If they feel that that's important for students at colleges and universities, I think they should do it. I'm all for it. Now, just letting these students off the hook for their responsibilities when they may have recklessly gotten involved into loans that they could never pay back, and then the government's going to bail them out, not the way that I would go.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined this afternoon by my friend Scott Jennings. You see him on CNN, flapping his lips all the time. He's on the right side of these issues. He is a contributor to this show. He lives in Louisville, but spends a lot of time inside the swamp. I think he's in Louisville this afternoon. Scott Jennings, welcome back. It's been a few weeks. How are you?
I'm great, Mark. Good to hear you, brother.
Well, should we start with baseball? Just get that out of the way. Good Lord.
No, I would rather not start with baseball. In fact, I'd like to forget the last 3 weeks ever happened.
What happened? What? I mean, I think it's probably been 3 weeks since you and I have spoken, and maybe that's the key. We have to chat more often, but not great. Thank God, and I don't know how much of a hockey fan you are, but thankfully, of course, we have the Blues on this Stanley Cup run right now, because I think this whole town would be very depressed, and we're sort of putting it aside until hockey's over.
Yeah, the hockey team is great. The Cardinals, unfortunately, you know, the last 3 weeks have felt like the last 3 years, which is just a team that seems to regress back to the mean every time it takes a step forward. It's been very disappointing, and the tools are all there. The players are all there. Everything that you need to win is there. I just am hoping manager Schilt can get it all together for us this summer so we can make a run.
You know, I tend to not get too worried because it is a long season, but this has just been, especially because you juxtapose it, if you will, with the start of the season, it's just been a tale of two seasons already, and we're just 2 months in, so it's a little confusing. And, you know, I don't know if you go back to last summer and say, well, maybe it wasn't all Mike Matheny's fault. I'm not putting this on Mike Schilt, but there have to be some changes, and I think Matt Carpenter has to be one of those changes personally, but we'll see what he does.
Yeah, Carp's struggling. The starting pitching has not been great. Obviously, we had bullpen issues against Texas over the weekend. So, there are some bright spots in the offense. I mean, Yachty is terrific. Ozuna is clearly better than he was last year. The shortstop, DeJong, is terrific. I mean, the parts are there. You can see the parts in there. But, yeah, we got to get better pitching, I think, to start.
All right. Well, we'll see if the office is probably listening here this afternoon downtown. So they're probably at work on that right now. Scott, we'll just have to have faith that better things are still to come. And, look, we have some folks who are hoping to be back in this lineup soon. We'll see if Alex Reyes can not break another finger. Let's talk about an issue here that has been important in Missouri and in Georgia and Alabama and other states. And obviously nationwide, we're looking at a potential case for the U.S. Supreme Court. We had a heartbeat bill that was passed last week here in Missouri. Now, Scott, I talked about this a little bit earlier this afternoon. I am certainly pro-life, but I do think that there's potential here, and the other side does it too when it comes to infanticide, of overreach politically. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I think that the Democrats have overreached in Virginia, New York, and other states where they are pushing for 40-week abortions. Now, I think the state legislatures that you mentioned on the Republican side are obviously employing a legal strategy to try to get to the Supreme Court to deal with Roe versus Wade. I think Donald Trump weighing in for the Republicans over the weekend, reaffirming the Republican Party's stance on abortion, which is to be the pro-life party, but to be for exceptions. That's been our position, you know, going back to the Reagan years. That's the most politically advantageous place to be for the Republicans, especially when you consider that all the Democratic presidential candidates have essentially endorsed 40-week abortions, which is far outside the mainstream.
But the flip side of that would be the no-exception bills, which are seemingly passing, because I think that there are women who would consider themselves against abortion that might be uncomfortable with that as well.
Yeah, I think the no-exception bill in Alabama does not conform with what I would consider to be the wide mainstream view of the Republican Party. That's why I think it was so important for President Trump to weigh in on this issue, because if you look at what the Democrats have done, Ralph Northam's comments, Cuomo in New York, you know, they're out there having pep rallies and cheerleading for 40-week abortions.
Yeah, that I don't get
and
either.
And all of their presidential candidates are adopting that position. Trump did not adopt the Alabama position. In fact, he said, the Republican Party position is this. So next year, the choice will be a mainstream pro-life party with reasonable exceptions versus the 40-week abortion party. And I think the Republicans, frankly, will win that argument.
You think they will? Because I think that the way that you just laid it out, they might. But I think if you have, and look, Scott, we know how the media is going to play these things. If the focus is all one-sided, which it will be, and if it's going to be on the bills that have no exception for rape or incest, that's going to trouble a lot of suburban women in Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin.
Well, look, I think the president's position is going to be the position that defines the Republican Party, and his position has been made very clear, and it's not going to change. I think the Democrats would love to run against the Alabama legislature nationally. I would say this, though, Mark, there is a race in Alabama for U.S. Senate next year. And that's where the Democrats are defending Doug Jones. I mean, if I were running a race down there, I'd much rather be the pro-life candidate than the candidate that Jones is, which is a candidate of the party that apparently supports 40-week abortions and infanticide. So in Alabama, that's going to work. The president's position, though, is what's going to define the Republican Party nationally, no matter how hard the Democrats try to define it otherwise.
Scott Jennings is my guest on KMOX this afternoon. I think since we did speak about 3 weeks ago, there have been maybe 14 or 15 more Democrat candidates, including a couple I've certainly never heard of, and nor has anyone else. But Biden has surged to the top of these polls. There was a poll that came out from Pennsylvania last week, you know, if the election were held today type of poll against Biden and Trump. He did quite well. Should we believe anything that those polls tell us in May of 2019?
Well, I think that he is certainly the front runner today. There's obviously a lot of room between now and when people start voting in Iowa and New Hampshire and the other early states. But yeah, he's clearly in charge right now, and we'll see if his politics can hold up to the Democratic Party primary process. He's not got a record that sort of matches the current policy energy in the Democratic Party. And I'm interested to see if he adopts some of those modern Democratic policies. You know, we were just talking about abortion. He's been relatively moderate on abortion over the years, but my presumption is he's going to have to adopt a much more liberal stance. This is the problem for Biden. If he has to go to the left to maintain enough support to win the nomination, I think it hurts his electability argument.
You know, I think I've seen some tweets from you along these lines. We've been scratching our heads a couple of times when there's good economic news. I mean, the president, do you think someone can convince him just to keep hammering on this economic news, Scott?
I hope so, because if he can keep this race largely focused on the economy, he is going to win re-election, and I'm not sure it's going to be all that close. First of all, incumbent presidents usually win re-election. That's number one. Number two, incumbent presidents with terrific economies usually win re-election. And so if he talks about that, that's really his path back, in my opinion, to those voters that he stuck with him in the suburbs in 2016 but went away from the Republicans in 2018. The way you reel those folks in is by saying, look, your job is better, your spouse's job is better, your wages are up, your 401k is up, your kid's 529 plan
that's
is
right.
doing great. This is a country that's doing right by your family, and I'm the one running it. I mean, that's a very clear and clean argument, but he's got to make that in a disciplined way.
Yeah, it's a really good argument. I would have confidence that most people could use that to their advantage significantly. I'm not so sure here. We'll have to see. And by the way, speaking of social media and everything, I was paging through yours, and I had to point out one thing that I really liked. You were replying to Scott, for people who don't know, he's on CNN all the time. I mean, not as big as this show, but people watch that. So there was somebody who responded to you and said, how are you even employed? I have only a GED and can eat your political lunch. The response from Mr. Jennings was, well, it is a good economy.
I tell you, when you're in the business of talking, man, there's the business is good. There's plenty of jobs out there for people who want to prattle on all day. Thank God somebody saw fit to take pity on me and stick me in front of a television camera. So thank you for pointing that out, dear tweeter, and I was glad to engage with our viewers.
Hey, did you catch? I saw your pictures on Derby Day. We saw each other last year. I didn't make it this year. Did you cash any tickets that day a couple weeks ago?
Derby was brutal. I had one good day opening week at the track that was better than usual, but Derby was a brutal day for me and, of course, was brutal for a lot of people. I was sitting near some people. In fact, I had a guest who had a friend who had texted him mere minutes before the race to put 300 to win on maximum security and then had it yanked away from him. So it was a brutal day up there where I was sitting for some folks who were holding those maximum security tickets for a half an hour.
How about this? I had 200 to win, and I had the Exacta before it was ripped away from the stewards.
Man.
So, yeah, the only saving grace, the only reason I haven't just completely gone crazy over this is that if I would have had the Tri or the Super, then that would have put me over the edge. But I'm forcing myself to laugh about it here in the aftermath. And then I didn't hit the Preakness either. I usually can at least hit the Preakness, but I messed up that one too over the weekend.
Yeah, I had to watch the Preakness. I was the keynote speaker at a Republican dinner in Kentucky on Saturday night, and they literally paused the dinner for 30 minutes for the entire crowd to watch horse racing for 30 minutes, and then we got back to the dinner. That's how much we love horses in Kentucky.
I love it. Hey, by the way, have you wrapped up your semester, professor, at Harvard?
Yes, I have. In fact, the semester is wrapped. The grades are posted. I have seen the student evaluations, which if you've never taught a college class, is very exciting. I've got all my evaluations back today and have had fun reading those. So it looks like everybody had a fun semester.
So you mean that's when
the professors Mook and Jennings.
That's when they evaluate you?
Oh, yeah, they give you grades. And they ask
those.
Them questions, and they say, oh, yeah. They say, how did this person do? And they ask them a range of questions. It's really insightful and illuminating, but it was a little scary to open that document when I got it.
Hey, here would be my recommendation. How about a little nighttime tweet storm on those? I'd love to see that. So keep that in mind. We'll see. All right. Scott Jennings, enjoy the reviews. Hopefully they'll be generous for you and Mr. Mook at Harvard. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
Scott Jennings, big Cardinals fan. Yeah, he was teaching a class for the second year in a row at Harvard with Robbie Mook, who used to run the Clinton campaign, very involved with the Clintons, and they had a lot of fun educating the men and women at Harvard. So Scott's been sharing some of those stories along the way. Speaking of stories, I got a great story. We're going to talk about the PGA and what Brooks Koepka did, but a great local story that is bound to get you. I know that the people involved got a little emotional. I think it's a great story. I don't want to share it exactly because it ruins the surprise. So that's coming up. It'll all come together here in a few minutes.
The St. Louis Blues, the Western Conference Final.
They take a 3-2 series lead and come home for Game 6 with a chance to move on to the Stanley Cup Final.
It's Game 6 tomorrow night, pregame 6:30. The puck drops at 7, and you can hear the game on Y98FM, streaming on radio.com and KMOX.com.
I took part in a great golf event at Forest Park over the weekend, the 2019 Lee Barrett Memorial Golf Benefit. I was invited by my friend Trey Hogan. I don't often like to admit that he's my friend, but in this case, I think I'm forced to do it. And it was help for Lee Barrett. We're going to tell you his story. His brother Andy is with me this afternoon. Andy, how are you?
Good, Mark. How are you?
You kind of, you know, appreciate my instincts there with not admitting publicly that I know Trey Hogan?
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew you played with Trey, so I was hoping that you had a good time despite the company out there.
Well, we had a great time. And, you know, one of the things that happened was he got a call when we were on the course about something that you did that is just spectacular. And I'm going to share that with people, and you're going to share it with them in just in a second here. But let's talk about your brother first and foremost. And I did not know your brother. I was invited by Trey to play in this. But he was in the Air Force, correct? And he passed away. This was a non-military-related plane crash from a few years ago that he passed away in.
Yeah. I mean, I'd give you just a little bit of a background if you
sure,
want.
Absolutely.
We grew up here in St. Louis, and Lee knew, you know, from a very early age that he wanted to be an Air Force pilot, and, you know, kind of unlike most of us who have those childhood dreams of being a Cardinal of Blues or a garbage man, you know, whatever it is, he followed through and, you know, took the steps, and it's a pretty competitive thing and a hard thing to get accepted into to be an Air Force pilot. But he did that. He did ROTC at USC and graduated, and then flew B-1 bombers in the Air Force for, almost 10 years. He did 3 combat tours in Afghanistan and Iraq. And then he was back in the States, and he got accepted into a test pilot program, which is another super competitive Air Force program where they test the new Air Force planes. And so he was out at Edwards Air Force Base in California working on that when unfortunately and tragically passed away. He had his own plane. He had a commercial pilot license as well. January of 2017, he was just moving his plane from one airport to another. It was like a 9-minute, flight plan, and something happened, and tragically he crashed and passed away.
And you guys have put this golf tournament together. I'm guessing was this the second year or the third?
This is the first year.
The first year, okay.
Yeah, we were planning to make it an annual thing, but this was the first year that we did it.
So tell your story from Saturday.
It was kind of a wild one. We had just gotten started. It was our fourth or fifth hole on a scramble. The wind was blowing pretty good out there.
Yeah, it was dusty.
So it was a shorter par 3, blind shot. And I hit first, and, you know, I had a pretty good indication that it was a good shot, but you couldn't see the pin because it was over a bunker. And then everybody hit, and then we drove up to the green, and I didn't see my ball. And I said, I can't believe I must have gone long in this hole. So I went, and I was looking, on the other side of the green for my ball, and I just had the inclination to say, I'm going to go check the cup. And I walked over, and there's a Bridgestone golf ball sitting right in there. So
that is crazy. So you get a hole. Now, it wasn't a hole-in-one where anything was being awarded, right?
No, correct. Yeah, we were giving away a couple things, a car and a couple other things on some of the other holes. So unfortunately, it was not a prize hole, but...
So I'm on the course, get a call. I can't remember who called. Maybe it was you, but Trey tells us the story, and he's almost getting emotional telling the story. You had to have been overcome by emotion.
Yeah, it was an emotional thing. My parents had paid to sponsor a hole in our tournament too. So it was on the hole that they sponsored, the Barra family hole, on the tournament for my brother.
It was pretty
exciting, and certainly emotional too.
Had you ever had a hole in one previously?
No, okay. Never.
Nor have I.
And that would partly explain why I was so excited. I didn't take the ball. Didn't pull the ball, and 2 holes later, I hooked my second shot on a par 5 into the water.
Now, there is one other, not to ruin your whole weekend or anything, but there is one other possibility, because since I was playing with Trey and the way he was shanking the ball, there's a chance, I don't know if you guys were playing the same ball, he could have, you know, gotten into that cup from a hole 3 or 4, you know, tee boxes away.
There is the chance. I played with him before, so
yes.
I know that shot very well.
There is the chance. I just, I don't want to ruin the whole experience, but there is that option. Now, can you, without getting me fined by the FCC or fired, explain your brother's call sign or his nickname, which was Swab?
Yeah, sure. So,
I love this too.
Of course, is called Iceman or Maverick. You know, they're not. They're all self-deprecating call signs,
right?
But I'm going to tread gently here, but he was, it was right around the movie at the time, like when Titanic was big, you know, when he was, just, very newly in the Air Force, and his fiance, I think, or girlfriend, and then became his wife, did a naked sketch of him. Like, if you remember the movie Titanic, Leonardo yes. DiCaprio sketches, you know, I forget the lady's name, but anyway, so there was a naked sketch, and it was sitting on his desk, and a couple Air Force buddies were over there one night and somehow came across it. So it stands for sketches with
blank. We'll just say a blank. We'll play sketches with a blank. Swab. Yes, swab. we can fill we can fill in the blank on that. I think most people will recognize. We can. Well, we'll just leave it out there. People can use use their imagination on that one to prevent the FCC fine.
Right,
Andy,
right.
Thanks so much for sharing. That's awesome. It is an awesome story. You'll have not only your brother's memory, but this memory for the rest of your life. And what a story! I don't care that surpasses a car or cash or anything like that. It's a great story.
It was icing on the cake of what was a pretty good day already, and then have something like that happen. You know. Maybe he would let the wind blow a little bit extra my way or something on that shot.
We had a blast the other day. I think we even played somewhat respectably, so hopefully we'll be back for next year's tournament. Andy Barra, thank you so much, and give me a heads up next year. We'll help promote the event, okay?
All right, we'll do. Thanks, Mark.
I love that story. Swab, for those people, because Dave was still confused in the other room, I want to help people put it together. Swab was sketching with a rhymes with loner. We'll just say that. Rhymes with loner, right? Swab. Got it, Dave, now? Okay. So that was Saturday, St. Louis, hole in one. What a crazy story. This is crazy too, I think. Sunday.
Oh. It's a Koepka coronation.
Yeah, Brooks Koepka. Back-to-back PGAs in less than, I suppose, 9 months because we were here at Belrive last year. Dan Reardon, our golf correspondent, was there on Long Island. No relation. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing fine, Mark. And yeah, it was a special... Actually, it's been a special couple of years for Koepka, you know, two back-to-back majors in the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship. A little distasteful the way the galleries treated him coming down the stretch, but he hung in there and posted the win over.
I was on the golf course myself yesterday, so I did not really see that. I do have the PGA record. I watched a ton of the coverage, but what happened with those galleries? Explain that to me.
Well, you know, as he was struggling after the 10th hole, he had, you know, four consecutive bogeys with this big lead, and he was hearing words like choke and things like that yelled at him. And then when Dustin Johnson got pretty close to him on the leaderboard, people literally in his galleries were chanting DJ, DJ, DJ on the 14th hole. And Koepka afterwards said, you know, that was actually a source of focus for him because he was aware of the fact that his lead was diminishing.
Yeah.
And he needed something to sort of kick him in the rear. And, the crowd actually kicked him in the rear, but I don't, you know, Harold Varner was playing with Koepka, and he said he, you know, at that point in time, he started rooting for the player that he was playing with.
Well, let's talk about Harold Varner for just a second here, because this guy's, what was his lead going into the final round?
He had a 7-shot lead over Harold Varner.
And I think he shot about the same score I did yesterday because he got it.
He shot 81.
Yes. Well, mine was a little higher, but that was a tough round for him. Look, here's my theory on Koepka. I have an amazing amount of respect for him. I wonder, and I think what the fans wanted is what maybe a lot of folks at home wanted. They wanted some drama because to see a guy run away with it is not that fun or compelling when it comes to entertainment. I wonder, though, Dan, I'd love your opinion on this. Do you think Koepka gets a bit of a, you know, maybe a bad, I don't know, I look at him like the fraternity, the country club fraternity bro that, you know, is probably not that nice of a guy. Now, I'm only saying that based on an image and what he looks like. I know nothing about it. I don't know Brooks. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But I think people might have that perception of him, which is maybe why he doesn't get the fan support. Just one theory.
I think it's more that he's not animated on the golf course.
Well, that could be.
He doesn't change expressions on the golf course. You know, that he is very deadpan. In fact, his celebration, his pump, after that 5-foot putt dropped on 18, was very out of character. I mean, certainly different than what we saw here in St. Louis. And I think that's a little bit works against him. At the same time, Mark, I'm going to say this rush to coronate, and I think that's the word that Jim Nantz used when he made the putt. I think that is just that, a rush. You know, even within the context of this championship, you know, he was 4 over par on the weekend, not just on Sunday. He shot 144 on the weekend. He shot 128 early on. So this was a great win for him. But the performance probably raised as many questions about his game as it answered questions about his ability to win major championships. And so I think that we need to look at him in the moment and not try to project into the future and say a lot about him. You know, we had this with Rory. We had this with Jason Day. We had this with Jordan Spieth.
Right.
We've had this over and over again. He'll be the betting favorite going into Pebble Beach. And certainly with a caddy who grew up at Royal Portrush, he'll be the favorite going into the Open Championship. But, you know, we keep waiting for somebody to do a Tiger. And there are no people right now that are going to do a Tiger. I don't care if it's Brooks or Jordan or whoever these people are. Tiger is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of player. And to ask other players to measure up to that standard, I think, is tremendously unfair and certainly a little presumptuous at this point in time.
I think you're right about that. It's just an odd dynamic when you have a guy that wins majors and he doesn't win that many other tournaments. I think he is a great player. We'll see where this takes him. One thing that I loved from, and I'm sure you heard this story out there at Bethpage, but on Tuesday, Pat Perez, another tour pro, I can't even remember if Pat made the cut, he played the practice round with Brooks Koepka. Afterwards, he said, congratulations on winning the 101st PGA Championship because of how well he was playing that course. So,
well, and he said it on Saturday. This is a time on a Sunday morning show. When he was asked, do you expect to win on Saturday at the press conference, he said yes.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say that. And I'm sure he was sweating that a little bit when the lead shrunk to one stroke, although it probably never really entered his mind. But that would have been a very embarrassing moment had he lost to Dustin Johnson, who quite honestly has to kick himself that he didn't finish stronger and could have maybe won this championship.
Sometimes I think what the fans forget, too, about the emotions is that these guys have not only swing coaches and golf coaches, but they have mental coaches. And those mental coaches do not want them to show any range of emotion on the golf course because you can get to either extreme. So I think that what happened with the fist pump is he's like, finally, I've been even keel. I got to keep these emotions in check. But obviously, he's thrilled at what he accomplished. And it was a great tournament. Dan, thank you for all your help. And where are we playing next year? Is it Pebble Beach next year?
Pebble Beach is the U.S. Open in a month, and the PGA goes to Harding Park in San Francisco next year.
In the same area. That's right. You told me that the other day. Can't wait. This will seem weird. It'll be a full year wait, though, to next May. But we have the U.S. Open just around the corner. Dan, we'll talk soon in advance of that.
Enjoy it, Mark.
Take care. We still need to play soon, too.
We'll do that.
All right, 3:48. Stand by.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
And it is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. So you got this guy, James Holzhauer, who is on Jeopardy, and he has now won $1.69 million. His 22-game winning streak is on the line every day. Ken Jennings won $2.4 million in 74 games, so he is approaching Jeopardy immortality. However, what do the people who have faced him on the show have to say? This was on CNN. Adam Levin, not to be confused with Adam Levine.
It was certainly something I had never seen before in terms of his speed and his strategy of using the bottom clues to build up a big lead. Was I intimidated? Maybe a little bit, but I knew I was a pretty good player and that I was going to go out there and have fun and have the best time I could.
All right, so that's Adam. Didn't do very well. Had fun. Alex Basden.
I don't quite think that he's broken the game, but I think that his gameplay style is definitely something that we cannot really beat by traditionally playing Jeopardy. I think that he's definitely changing the game, but I don't know if the ways that he has changed the game can be replicated.
Okay, I'm gonna plead Jeopardy, ignorance here. I don't know. Is he pressing the buttons faster with his thumbs? The show, in our defense, I think the show is on when we're on the air here. Anyway, Robin Falcon, listen to her. Talk about sore loser.
He's turned it into work. He turned it into his job. He took a year off from his job. That's what he told me, to just focus on and perfect this. For us, this is a game. This is a fun experience. And it, when it comes to dealing with him, it was not.
What do you mean it wasn't fun?
I've made no secret of the fact that James and I did not get on backstage. I did not feel he was respectful to me. He wasn't respectful to a lot of the other people, to the staff, I felt. And he doesn't have the respect for the game. Yeah, it wasn't what we were expecting. It's not what we'd prepared for.
Yeah, that's what's called being a sore loser. I think just from hearing her voice, I understand why James didn't like you, Robin. I hate to say it. That's your audio cut of the day.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave. I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.